Emergency rooms can be noisy places when there's a cardiac crisis. The doctors and nurses may not notice because they're busy doing what they do, but when you're the patient, you're at the center of a symphony of beeps and squeaks and wheezes and words. I had just closed my eyes to rest for a moment when that all stopped. The room suddenly went silent. No noise, and none of the overwhelming weariness I'd been feeling only a moment before. I assumed the power had gone off in the hospital, and I remember thinking, just my luck. But I quickly realized it was more than that. There were no non-electrical sounds either, no voices, no gurgling of tubes or squeak of rubber soles on tile floors. I opened my eyes again, this time to another world. There was no sign of the ER, and instead of lying down, I was standing on a grassy hillside, with a low valley sloping away from my feet. A few yards away, a small stream ran off in both directions parallel to the valley's edge. For some unknown reason, everything appeared to be in different shades of brown. Not a withered, desiccated brown, but a palette of earthy tones that was every bit as alive as any panorama of green. I was still in my pay-attention mode, the one I'd adopted in the ambulance, and it took me only a moment to decide what had happened. The words formed in my mind without any prompting. I've died. They lost me. Not very eloquent, perhaps, considering the circumstances, but that's exactly what popped into my head. I knew in that instant my previous life was gone. There was time for only a fleeting moment of regret before my attention was drawn to a strange, shimmering light just ahead of me and slightly to my left. As I watched, it coalesced into an image of my family standing together, all looking in the same direction, but past me over my right shoulder. Their expressions were indistinct, but I had the impression of great sadness. I realized I would never see any of them again, at least not in the life we'd known together. I wouldn't get to see my younger niece and nephews grow up, see my eldest niece get married next spring, grow old with my spouse. I knew my death would leave a gap in all their lives, particularly my wife's, and I couldn't help but worry about how they would cope. It seemed unfair of me to leave them like that. But in that same moment, a wondrous experience began. Even as I was focusing on the image in front of me, I began to feel some sort of force flowing into my body, beginning with a tingle in the soles of my feet and welling upwards. I use the word force only because I can't think of a more accurate way to convey what I felt. And even though doing so is as overly simplistic as describing a golden sunset as merely light or a rainbow as some colors, as it washed through every channel and pore in my body, I began to understand that there was some sort of intelligence at work. I began to hear, to feel, to sense, to touch, to taste, to comprehend, a communication being offered to me. Again, words formed unbidden in my mind. Don't worry. They love each other. They'll take care of each other. And with that thought, every trace of concern or regret evaporated, as did the vision of my family. They faded from sight as I was overwhelmed with yet another level of sensation. I had the most profound feeling of being at peace, being cared for, being loved. A complete and comforting understanding that everything was exactly as it should be. I sensed other presences beyond my sight, invisible but undeniably there. I couldn't tell if they were people I knew, or even people at all. But there was definitely something there, some kind of intelligence just beyond my sight. And underlying their presence and that of the force that continued to flow through me was another distinctly different but complementary sensation. I felt I was being called home. I didn't know exactly where that might be or what awaited me when I got there, but the feeling of being welcomed was overwhelming. I have often tried to capture that feeling in words, but it's always been elusive. The closest I can come is to tell you a story, and it goes something like this. There was a winter day when I was in high school, 13 or 14 years old. I had stayed late after class for some reason long forgotten, and it was dark when I finally started for our house. It was one of those blustery, slushy days that seem colder than they are, especially when the wind cuts through your coat and you've forgotten your gloves. I stuffed my hands as deep in my pockets as I could, but even so, my fingers were numb. With my collar flipped up, I burrowed into my overcoat, head down and pushing into the wind. Being an appearance-conscious teenager, I'd left my uncool overshoes at home that morning, and by the time I walked the 10 or so blocks from the school to my neighborhood, my ever-so-stylish leather shoes were soaked, and my feet along with them. I hadn't eaten since lunchtime. I was cold, wet, and hungry, a distinctly unpleasant combination. The house where our family lived sat on a quiet residential street with a laneway running the length of the block behind it, lined with garages and parking spaces. That was my customary path home because it saved me from walking all the way around to the front of the block. As I trudged the last few dozen feet to our back door, I felt just about as miserable as a self-centered teen can feel, and that's pretty low. There was a garage that obscured the view of our place until you were almost at the back gate, and as I came around that corner, I lifted my head and was struck by the sight of the house rising out of the evening gloom. It was a tall, narrow, three-story brick structure with windows in the kitchen and dining room looking out onto the backyard. As cold and tired as I was, for some reason I paused to take in that picture, and it has stayed with me ever since. The top of the house faded into the evening darkness, but the windows on the main floor were ablaze with light. I knew my mother was inside preparing supper, and my father would be reading the paper in the living room. My little brother was probably watching television in the basement, and the university students who boarded with us would be studying in their rooms on the third floor, distracted, no doubt, by the aroma of the meal about to be served. At that moment, I understood what powerful bonds connected me to my family and to the place where we lived. With just a few more steps, I would be home, safely behind the doors of the one place where I could be absolutely certain I was loved, wanted, and would be cared for and protected. That's the kind of feeling that swept through me as I stood on the edge of that valley, but magnified 1,000, 1,000,000 times. I was going home.